Hello, everybody. Everybody in the world. Emmanuel Macron's wife, Narendra Modi, some guy on a bus in Singapore. Welcome, everybody, to episode 92 of the Alexis L podcast. And Talal, you wanted to kick us off with a story of a thing that happened to you.
Yeah, man, I thought this would be interesting fodder for the podder. I went to last week, or 2 weeks ago now, I went to Madame Tussauds. Don't ask why, but I was there with some, with my girlfriend's family. And you know how it's all like, it's very touristy now. It's mostly tourists. There's always tour buses out the front. And just so happened, when we came in at the same time as this foreign tourist group. And they were all wearing these bright green hoodies. And at one point, I noticed that it had Hebrew writing on it. And of course, they were all from Israel. And briefly, I was kind of like, this is the first time I'd actually encountered Israelis.
En masse.
En masse. And obviously, you find yourself talking like this. It's like, you're speaking as of a whole nation, like, and obviously I'm coming at you because I got angry seeing all these Israelis around.
I hate
having to have that thought in my head that I hate this country, because that's like the definition of racism, like, in a way.
Well, except they are all on board. I mean, polls show that the vast majority of them are on board with the genocide, aren't they?
And they accuse Arabs of being raised to hate Jews from birth, which I was never fucking raised to do that. And no one in my family was raised to hate Jews. But we know for a fact that Israelis are kind of taught from a young age that Arabs are less than human.
Linda said there's been a hoo-ha with James O'Brien about he had an episode.
Yeah, did he say Jews or Israelis?
James O'Brien, Arabs. I don't know.
But he was reading someone's text.
Letter, yeah. And then the campaign against anti-Semitism, which is in fact a campaign for genocide and ethnic cleansing.
And then he didn't, he made a formal apology, but he didn't once mention that, by the way, this is a call-in show and my whole job is to read messages from the public. But I guess he didn't correct them or hold them up.
I don't know the details, really. I was on his show last week. I wasn't on for very long. They got involved in some other nonsense. So,
well, anyway, I was surrounded, completely flanked and outnumbered by Israeli, seemingly tourists. But then a closer look, to cut the long story short, I soon realized they were all kids, apart from the adults who were chaperoning them.
Yeah.
And they were all cancer kids.
Yes.
In varying degrees of severity. Some of them were in wheelchairs, some of them had no hair, but they were all either survivors or patients of cancer. And now I'm stood there.
Feeling extremely complicated emotions.
Feeling sorry for them. And, oh my God, this is horrible. And what a nice thing to take these kids on an international trip. These are Israelis. These are the people who have been gaslit and by, obviously not the children, but this is the nation that has been destroying Gaza. It's fucking filled me with complicated, conflicting emotions, and they were there the whole time. So I'm trying to enjoy it and for the benefit of my.
Actually, it's pretty terrible anyway, Madame Tussauds.
It's funny when you're a bit tipsy. It is funny. Yeah.
Yeah, this genocidal nation, it does force us into all these complicated emotions, doesn't it? And, you know, you're forced to, because we are good people, we have to wrestle. I mean, it's not as severe as you, but my parallel of that is that there's a team in the Tour de France called Israel Premier Tech. And there's been massive demonstrations. I'd sent a voicemail to Ned Bolting because, you know, I did some commentary on the Tour de France. Mm-hmm. They should really mention there's been massive demonstrations and protests against Israel Premier Tech. But also there's several British riders who are riding for them, and I think I just kind of hate them, think of them as mercenaries. And also, I keep hoping that they'll crash. And in fact, they did. Yeah. They did yesterday. They were involved.
They did crash.
They did. There was a big crash, and several members of Israel Genocide Tech did come down. But it's just another sort of byproduct, I think, of this genocide that
it's filling our hearts with anger.
Look what it's doing to us, really. So yeah. So anyway, yeah.
I don't want to be this person. I don't want to be wishing harm on a kid. You know. You can imagine the flip flopping of thoughts that was going on in my head. You know.
Yeah.
At one point, there was the bloody wax figure of Mo Salah. I was curious to see how the Israelis would react to different mannequins. But one of them ran up to Mo Salah and went, Habibi Salah! And said Habibi Salah at him. And that confused me.
Yeah.
We're reaching new lows now in the depravity with Gaza, footage.
What
we're seeing.
Yeah.
They don't look real. These skeletal children.
Yeah.
It's like something from a, you know, Guillermo del Toro movie or something.
Yeah. Well, every day brings new horrors. I was I performed at this Medics for Palestine benefit on Saturday at the
Voices for Gaza.
Yeah, the Troxy. So that was very nice, real feeling of solidarity. Saw lots of people who I'd only met online before. Saw Taig, who we're seeing tomorrow. Riz Ahmed, had a nice chat to him. Nish Kumar, good people, all of them. Paloma Faith hugged me.
Did Nish talk to you?
I didn't really. I think I just said, shook his hand in the corridor and said, I'm going now or something, which in retrospect I feel guilty about, really. But he is.
Because I've met him a couple times now, and he's going to hopefully do this podcast around September time. He'll come
Good.
Well, he does great things. He's got this this podcast called Pod Save the World, I think.
Oh, right. That's him, is it?
Yeah. And he's a good, very outspoken and a good speaker. He's a very smart guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've spoken to a few people. Tig said he was starstruck seeing you in the flesh.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, good. Right. Who wouldn't be?
Yeah, incredible lineup. Previous guests, Sami Abuwerde, Bassem Youssef, Tig Hickey, all on that stage.
Yeah.
Future guests, Nish Kumar and Khalid
Abdullah.
His song is gorgeous, isn't it?
I didn't. It was very difficult to hear anything, but it was so hot backstage. It was difficult, and you couldn't really get to the side of the stage. It was very difficult to see anybody apart from your own performance, as it were. So I didn't really. I was just running around talking to people. Then I left at the interval.
Have you not heard his song, though?
I haven't. No. But I will.
I kind of want to. I was half thinking of starting the episode with playing it for you.
No, you could do.
I'm going to play it for you. Fuck it. Got to fill the time, don't we?
Yeah. The time is filled anyway, to misquote Samuel Beckett, but yes.
What's that in reference to? What does that mean?
Is it from Waiting for Godot? It passes the time. The time passes anyway.
Oh, yeah, whether we pass it or not.
Yeah, it's a Beckett's. Beckett quote.
Okay, so I've managed to figure it out. So a few weeks ago, Khalid Abdullah wrote this song and posted it online. It got circulated, and Annie Lennox is a big fan of it. She posted it on her page and everything. I'd love to get her on this show. Do you like Annie Lennox?
Yes, I went to her wedding, to somebody. I doubt if she's still married to whoever it was.
Don't say that, Alexei.
Well, maybe she is. I don't know. I went to her wedding anyway.
She's very outspoken on Palestine. We should get her.
Yeah, right? Good for her. Yeah.
She's got a rich history that she could tell us about.
Yeah.
So yeah. This is Khalid Abdullah with a simple song. It's a bit long, so give me the signal if you want me to cut it off at any point. But it's right. Absolutely stunning. Here we go.
This is a simple song, a simple song. This is a simple song about simple things, a simple song about simple things, a simple song about simple things. A child is killed, a child is killed, a child is killed, so many killed. This is a simple song, a simple song, a simple song about simple things. Who was that child? What was their story? What when they say they were here today? This is a simple song, a simple song. This is a simple song about simple things. They took our land and then they occupied us, and when we fought they call us terrorists. This is a simple song, a simple song. And then they segregated all our people. There were roads for them, but not for us. One law for them, one for us.
Well, that's lovely. I feel like I should get back to work, really. People can listen to it, download it. Presumably the funds, money raised, go to something.
I presume. I don't know about that.
No, they all go to CBS Records.
It looks like it's just out for anyone to listen
right,
to.
All right, all right. Right, 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 right.
But, yeah, oh, it's very pretty and very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And simple. I think the point he's making is it's fucking simple.
Yes.
It's a complicated situation.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'd rather not step in or make an opinion on this country. It's fucking simple.
Tomorrow, which will have happened by the time this goes out, since tomorrow will be yesterday or the day after. I think I'm going Palestine Solidarity Campaign want to leave 1,000 empty pans outside Downing Street to symbolise the 1,000 Palestinians who've been shot dead at the Israeli murder sites. So I'll be doing that tomorrow, but also news from the front line, actually. I went on Sunday, me and Linda went to the first meeting of Camden People's Alliance. The Camden People's Alliance will be the Camden branch of the new party when it finally comes into existence. And, it was really interesting. Linda was like the star there. I was like just Linda's husband. Everybody was running up to Linda. Oh, Linda, you know. I thought first, because there were obviously people I know from the, you know, particularly from the Jeremy years and from the Palestinian struggle, but it was great. It was really very mixed, like young people. Everybody, I mean, the very good chairwoman who kept everybody's contribution short, but nobody spoke for more than I mean, the speakers all spoke for like 5 minutes, and then at the end, 2 minutes. And everybody who contributed spoke for a minute or 2 minutes. And I think that that is vital, really, because what, you know, one of the techniques I think that that's used to weed out ordinary, normal people, get, you know, to eject them from the political process is boredom, really. And a part of that is speaking on and on and on and on and on. Mm. And it's really crucial, more important almost than ideology or organization, is that commitment to just fucking not talking for longer than you need to. And that was what was one of the things that was really, it's a really vital aspect.
Did she make a point of that before they started?
Well, she just kind of very gently, she said everybody was speaking. She just made a point that brevity was, you know, was a, in fact, the meeting finished early, which is extraordinary. I've never known her.
Was it busy?
Yeah, there's about 150 people there.
And what kind of... Were there any kind of
I mean, it's a very Andrew Feinstein was obviously is the sort of the leading, is the figurehead, and will presumably be, you know, our parliamentary candidate. Now, a lot of people talked about the corruption of Camden Council. They had a lot of them work for or have interests with property developers. Mm. They talked about housing, so they talked about local campaigns, but they just talked about, you know what I've been talking about for years is that, you know, you can't just set up a left-wing party in the same old way as you always have done, you know, call it the Socialist Labour Socialist Workers Alliance Party, you know, front, and, you know, have a top-down kind of leadership and just ask people to vote for you. This is about both community activism and a parliamentary, you know, a struggle for council seats and then parliamentary seats. And it, you know, it was, I mean, and that takes time, I think, which we joke about Jeremy talking to everybody in the world really before he sets up this party. But it is that what they plan to do, as I understand it, is have a grand conference, and then all the delegates, all the council, prospective council people standing for the council will be chosen by the membership from the bottom up, and
started to get bored now about it.
All right.
I see your point that you're making. It's also it's so off-putting, isn't it?
I want to deliver. But
I'm not saying to shut up, but I'm saying I get the point now. Like,
government
politics is so off-putting.
But that always was. It was so, you know, and they do, trade unions do it, you know. Student union politics, that was always just the fun. Unless you're a fucking slimy piece of fucking ambitious garbage, like somebody like Wes Street, and you would not for a second put up with the, you know, you got better things to do with your life than sit in meetings for hours and hours and hours, you know. And that's one of the ways that is one of the many ways in which decent people are excluded from the political process. And so I do think, you know, brevity is actually, and, you know, I was impressed to see it, brevity is essential for this process, really. So yeah, it was very heartening, I mean turnout is so low in local councils. I would have thought it would be relatively easy to
take over
the council, get our people elected, really. And there was representatives from the Bangladeshi community, from the black community, you know, young people. That was great. So if you live in Camden, join Camden People's Alliance. If you live in Southport, join Southport Independence, Liverpool Independence, majority in the Northeast. Preston Independence.
Has each district each constitution.
Yeah, so each
constituency got their own different name and different group.
Yeah, so these are all separate independent organizations at the moment. They will when the party forms.
So how will we know which one to join?
Well, you'll know because they'll be whatever the party's called. They will be then become local branches of the party. You know, whatever it's called, We Are Many or Aspire or Pilchards.
That's positive. I wonder what my local group will be.
Yeah, I don't know what there is in West London. There's
I'm in South. I don't live in West.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, shit. Sorry.
Lambeth. Independent.
There may not be a group. I'm just trying to think. There's obviously Peace and Justice in Islington North. I think Hackney, presumably, there is a.
And it's good that it's not like your whole meeting wasn't just talking about Palestine. Because
everyone presumably
is on the same ship regarding Palestine. And you're talking about local politics.
Yeah.
And housing and
community. Yes, exactly. It's got, you know, whatever you've, you know, and that, I mean, obviously Palestine should be a central part of it, but it's also got to be about local issues. And housing is obviously the pressing. Well, housing and I would say council corruption, which are kind of linked, but they are, you know, they are local issues that people care about, and that's what you've got to work on, really. You know, homelessness. I thought that was fine.
The message stays the same, Jeremy and Zara. You got to hurry the fuck up.
Farage
is making big moves.
Yeah,
and he's gaining popularity. And there's bloody those protests outside the asylum seekers' hotels.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I don't know how this process. I mean, I think that it is. You can't, if you're going to have a party that is different, that is from the bottom up. It unfortunately takes time to put those structures in place and.
You've changed your tone.
I know I have, yeah. Well, I was, you know, when, as John Maynard Keynes said, when the facts change, I change my opinion. And
be water, my friend.
What?
Be water, my friend.
Oh, yes. is that from Kung Fu Panda 2?
No, it's Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee. But yes, it does take time, and that is a problem. I don't know what the solution for that is, apart from just to get a freaking move.
And you know what? You're having a big role in getting the word about Marxism out there.
Yes,
you're fucking blowing up. We've just launched. We've just posted. Well, at the time of recording, it was yesterday. The next video of your Marxism dance. We've changed the song.
Yeah,
Shake It to the Marx now. It wasn't Bruno Marx, and now Shake It to the Marx. In less than 24 hours, 200,000 views.
That's fantastic.
But I thought I'd throw some of these comments at you, just because it's quite funny. I'm trying to introduce you to youth speak, but it went over your head a couple of times last night. But
I'll be 73. In a couple of weeks. I mean, for Christ's sake.
Someone wrote, this is kind of hot, not going to lie. Someone posted a really fun GIF. I want to show it to you. I'm going to show it. If you're watching, by the way, if you're on the Patreon, you can watch this on video. There's this really cool GIF. It says, seize the memes of production. There's Karl Marx suddenly becoming very cool and animated.
All right,
sees the memes of production. These are the best thing on the internet. Please continue. So glad this is back. Definitely the best Instagram concept ever. More teachers. Adding these to my moves when teaching theory and sociology.
Professors. I should say we're talking about the Marxist. Marx never used the phrase false consciousness, but Marxists have used it, but he's essentially talking about why people, you know, the working class support or fall prey to things that are actually against their interests. I mean, I mention religion or
monarchy,
but also you could mention patriotism as well. It's another, you know, it's another example of false consciousness.
And social media?
No, social media is an example of false consciousness in itself. I mean, because it's just a thing, isn't it? But I mean, obviously,
a kind of obsession. To your phone.
Addiction to your phone. Yeah. Well, we talk about that in the second or third video, don't we? That's something that Marx called commodity fetishism, which you could lump addiction to your phone under that, really, I think.
Again, more people who call you king, and now this one lady says king, calling you a king in a non-derogatory monarchy sense. But this is slang term. You call men king or women queen if they have done something impressive or you right. respect them. You go, slave right. queen. Someone said, I was like, it's giving Alexis Sale. And then I realized it was Alexis Sale. One person unironically posted, this reminds me of the guy from The Young Ones who was the train driver. Completely unironically posting that.
It's the same guy. Still fucking around 40 years later. He won't go away.
I've heard a comedian say, I'm quoting a comment, if Trump was voted uniquely by people who really benefited from his election, he would have received 1,000 votes.
Yeah, very good point, yeah.
You were the first Marxist I ever saw on TV when I was a kid. Now that I'm a serious communist a few decades later, I can't help but wonder if this is partly your doing. Keep it up.
Yeah, although you could say it's probably ruined his life as well, or her life. It's great fun. Be a communist. You spend all your life in meetings and selling a paper outside the station and occasionally getting punched in the face. Be a communist. Be blackmailed by, not blacklisted by your employer. Yep.
We need to write that song.
I
need to know, do you name the moves before or after you dance? I name them after the
Talal, the Talal's responsibility.
Alexi just dances. He does his thing.
My feed on my YouTube feed now does give me Check It to the Max, other people doing it. And it does. They do make me laugh because it's such a kind of cruel. It's such a stupid. It's such a cruel parody of all those sort of slightly self-obsessed people dancing in their living rooms and stuff. I mean, obviously,
I don't think it comes across as that though. I think comes across as just you making a fun little dance.
Yeah. No, it's true, really.
It's really cute.
But it does work perfectly with that track, I think.
There's a bit of pushback on Marx. Some comments saying, you know, Marx was delusional and he didn't know anything about genetics. The fact that he thinks humans can create a communist society is indicative of his failure. Well, he didn't have all the data, but even a cursory look at history shows human needs very clearly. The things that you mention here are the things humans create out of necessity. We have done it for thousands of years and we did it just as soon as we could. How can you both be a materialist and also ignore material facts?
Well, I don't quite know what point they're making. I mean, these economic systems are what human beings have done. It implies that systems of exploitation such as feudalism or capitalism are innate or inevitable. And I don't, as a communist, I don't believe that is true, that humans can have the ability to organize themselves in any way that they collectively wish, really. The fact that they've organized themselves into repressive systems is because because the repressors have gained power and used their power to enslave other people. But it doesn't have to be this way, I think. There's nothing innate about systems of exploitation or systems of delusion, if that's what they're saying. Marx, I don't know what they mean by genetics really either. I mean, certainly, obviously, Marx came after Darwin and presumably was aware of Darwin. The world, what we're talking about really is just the way that human beings arrange themselves and arrange the way that they make stuff and grow stuff, and there are a vast range of possibilities for that, I think.
Yeah.
And it's also that, I was reading an interview with Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the French, France Insoumise, France Unbowed leader. And he said, which I thought was very well put, that capitalism is a suicidal system, that it is a system of endless exploitation of finite resources, and it can't go on. Even if you love capitalism and think it's great and you've profited from it, it is unsustainable. You cannot, this system of exploitation, of people exploiting other people, also exploiting the planet, is unsustainable.
Yeah, especially if you're relying on fossil fuels.
Yeah, and that was another thread in the meeting, was obviously the environment and
one last comment. But Alexei, I played the game. I worked hard and studied hard, and I've been nice, and I changed my accent, and I learned to dress differently, and I don't call dinner tea anymore. Why can I still not take my children on holiday or pay someone to paint my walls? How do I win this game? How do I thrive instead of just survive? Is it time to just give up? And luckily she gets some support from other viewers.
Capitalism.
That is the result of capitalism, isn't
it? Yeah, that is it in a nutshell. You know, you can, and some people do, they, lose their accent and become a ruthless enforcer for capitalism and they prosper. But even then, I think you pay a price in your soul if you do that, really. The only system is come on board with Camden People's Alliance or whatever your local iteration of that is. You'll feel better. You'll feel great.
They are nicer people.
They are.
Communists are really, really cool and trendy and fun and angry and interesting.
Yeah. They are such good people, really. It's sort of over, every one of them runs, all the women who, were excited to see Linda, they all run bloody food banks or help refugees or, their days are taken up with doing good things, really. Whereas, people on the right, their days are taken up with evil. So self-serving, self-interest. So you feel better if you join our struggle. You feel better.
Not everywhere has... This could be a person who lives...
Yeah,
in the heart of Tory land or something where there isn't a community to join or something.
Well, I'll start one. I don't know. Yes, it's difficult.
All this, any advice that comes from this podcast is to be taken, it's an opinion and we don't know your situation. Or
no, we don't. I always thought, when I did live, I remember playing, I played Hereford, which is, the headquarters of the SAS and... I saw every malcontent. It was like 1,000-seater or something, but every malcontent in the Hereford area was there watching me. Even in rural areas, there's a core of people who if you can find them, you know.
I literally just got this text message that I want to read to you because this is so on point, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
This is from Kev Mudd, yeah? I love him. You met him. He helps run the cabaret tent at Glastonbury.
Right.
He's like Charlotte's right-hand man in a way, and he does all the promotion on the graphic design for the posters and stuff. But he's also a super funny, really good comedian in his own right. He's got a, you know, he at one point in his life, he was homeless and he was an addict and he cleaned himself up. And now he tours around on his, in his caravan, doing a comedy, and he's making a good living out of it. And he's a fucking legend. And he wrote to me actually yesterday saying, I want to write a letter to Alexi. Because he watched your interview for The Mirror, and it sparked something in him.
Mm-hmm.
And then this morning I was like, what do you mean a letter? And he literally, while we were talking just then, he messaged me. So I said, what, a letter like fan mail or something? And this is what he said. He said, no, I just feel like I'm kind of banging my head against a brick wall down here in the Tory heartlands. He lives in Cornwall. Like the comedy is going well, but I've got to spoon feed these motherfuckers anything even slightly left wing. I guess when I saw Alexi's video last night, it was kind of like what I needed to hear. It's a lonely existence, just as a left wing person down here, never mind one on the stage. I suppose I kind of felt like reaching out a bit and asking, how the hell did you manage to do all this in the 80s under a Tory government? Is it harder to be a political comedian now compared to back then? Stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it was... it's true. I mean, I'm in Camden, so fucking every other person is a radical. So it's easy enough for me. When you're in a rural place like Cornwall, I guess you just have to find... I don't know what you do, really. I mean, just find the people who... There will be other people who see the reality. There may not be many, but, you know. And other people, you know, once the reality is explained to them, it will open up a whole world for them. It wasn't... No, it'd be... I mean, I found it easy to be a political comedian in the 80s because while half the country supported Thatcher, half the country hated her, and it was that half that I... perform to. And also, you know, the world was much more, you know, that I feel much more sympathy for comedians now. There's all these malevolent groups, like, I mean, particularly on this, you know, Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, people like that who are just devoted to censoring speech on Palestine. And it was an advantage to be left wing in the 80s. It benefited your career, if anything, you know. The entire BBC drama department was staffed with Marxists, you know. Ken Loach, Kenneth Trodd, you know, Waris Hussein, people like that. It was, you know, it was a different era, really. And the pendulum has obviously swung much more now towards repression. You know, we're in a much darker time now, and so I have a lot of sympathy with comedians who are coming up, or, you know, it's, you know, you're risking more now, really. I mean, on the other hand, people will, the struggle is clearer now, I think, and people will support you more. I mean, Kneecap are playing arenas, aren't they? They're playing the Hydro in Scotland, in Glasgow, which is a 12,000 seater, I think. I mean, wow. They wouldn't be doing that if the forces of the pro-Israel lobby hadn't tried to silence them.
Mm.
They wouldn't be playing the Hydro, you know. So, I mean, it can, because one of them may go to prison for waving a Hezbollah flag, but that's another matter.
I want to tell Kev, you know, start your own night and make it a left-wing comedy night.
Yeah, there are.
People flock to that.
Yeah, there are everywhere. I know people in Cornwall who are pretty left-wing.
And bring in...
Fishermen.
Acts, like bring in headliners who are known for being left-wing, and that will attract your people.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that process is like, really, but I imagine in a way you could find a kind of solidarity from being radicals in a reactionary area. That may, you know, that may increase perhaps the affection that you feel for each other. I don't know, you know, the fact that you're under threat, really. But there will be people out there who feel as you do, I imagine.
Well, yeah, Kev wants to write you a letter.
Sure.
Is that, shall I let him?
Yeah.
Shall I give him your email or your address or whatever?
Well, you can have my email, yeah.
Okay.
Let's see.
Hear that, Kev. All right. Any other business?
No. We don't know. I had a very nice, I spent a couple of hours with Katie Halper, the American United Statesian podcaster. It was just really interesting talking to her about the ecology of, you know, of that, the other different web, you know, lots of different, you know, Majority Report with Sam Seder and the Young Turks and Hassan Piker and, you know, there's a real ecology of left-wing commentary on the internet, you know, which is given the right-wingness of all legacy media in the States. I think it's really interesting. And, you know, it's made me start to think about trying to do something similar here, like a Daily Show or, you know, you have to be, I guess you'd have to be more prepared, wouldn't you? And we'd have clips and stuff to show.
We've got our version here is Navarra Media, really.
Yeah, I mean, I know people have mixed feelings about Navarra. You know, some of the people. It's the same. I mean, my feeling is, which is that anybody who's more or less on our side, you know, is on our side, and I will accept that. I know other people have.
No one's infallible, and everything has nuance to it.
Yeah.
You know? No one's going to create that perfect beacon.
No. Linda's not keen on Navarra Media, and some of the presenters are better than others, I think. But, yeah, by and large, they're on our side, really, and I think that's... Yeah.
My issue with Navarra is the kind of tone and, like... I like what they talk about and what they say.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that they make more kind of viral, catchy clips that will attract audiences. And then they talk about urgent matters as well. But my issue is more about, it just feels a bit posh. We need something a bit more rough around the edges. And, we had a nice chat about, you know, you got inspired. I didn't realize it was Katie Halper that inspired you. About these kind of commentary style shows.
Well, it's also
listeners
that
at home, let us know, you know, if you think Alexis should do a daily or bi-weekly or twice weekly.
It'd be a video thing as well.
Streaming YouTube/Twitch. Current affairs commentary where we all like read articles together, watch clips, and then react in real time, make like an hour and a half show, clip it up, make little viral videos out of it. What do you think? And what do you think that would look like? Listeners at home, send us your messages on, you can email us at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. You can comment if you're watching this on YouTube, if you're listening to this on YouTube, comment below. Or on Patreon. But we'd also require a team and a studio. I don't know, equipment, software, tech. We'd need someone who's hot on the tech and make it look good.
Particularly marketing is where I'm getting more, you know, getting
this. We'd need possibly one or two more cast mates for the show to kind of keep the energy up and keep it bouncing.
Yeah.
So any suggestions or volunteers at home, you know, reach out about that too.
Yeah. I can't think of anything else really. I can't think of anything else to do. I can't think of comedy. All I want to do is talk about what's happening really.
I think there's space for it. And there's, you know, your voice is important and it should exist. It's a big undertaking. And so I think we'd need to grow the team a little bit. It can't just be me and you doing it, in case, you know, one of us can't make it that day, or we got booked for work, or or we make it earn enough money that we can turn down work and keep doing our show.
And
we can still pay rent. I say we.
I mean me.
I need to pay my rent. You know, I don't want to end up on the street.
I was big in the 80s when you got paid for shit.
No, people, though, but Sam Cedar, Hassan Piker, you know, these guys, they shamelessly and by and necessarily take donations from their audience.
Yeah.
People know that the mainstream media isn't going to give them this shit for free. So they got a tip, you know.
Yeah.
Buy them a coffee. That all adds up and that fucking pays their bills.
And yeah, because you can't see any other way to fund. We can't, because we won't take advertising really. So I can't see any other way to really finance it.
Limmy is another inspiring figure in this field.
Yes, I should look at him. Yeah.
He's on Twitch. I think exclusively streams on Twitch. But then
and he live streams
up on YouTube. He live streams 4 hours a day for, I think, Jesus 4 days a week. But he doesn't talk about news. He plays video games.
Right.
And then people send him shit to read or watch. And so he'll play his game and watch a video or something.
Right.
He's just naturally kind of, he's a funny, funny fecker about it.
Yeah, so I'm funny.
Yeah, you are.
I can be funny. It's true, though, it would need to, you know, contain more of that antic spirit of the videos, of the Marxism videos.
Possibly.
We did, I don't.
Possibly, just, I don't know. I think we could have a bank of articles and videos to watch. We just press stream.
Yeah.
Go live.
Yeah.
And you do an opening monologue. We have a little chat. I go, all right, what's the first article? And I'd be like, okay, fucking protests at Essex asylum seeker hotels. The police are being accused of bussing in anti-fascist protesters and riling up the crowd further. Any thoughts, Alexi? And you'd have to have your thoughts and then discuss it. Move on to the next topic. Boom, 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 boom. That's kind of how I'm picturing it. You know, I'll play you a news clip, a video. I might play you a song like I did today. We'll read some articles. If you don't understand something, we don't know a reference, we go on the Wikipedia page and read up about it. And we learn with the audience all at the same time, reading stuff. And
yeah, that's good.
Have you had any thoughts on a film club movie, Alexi?
I think let's do Battle for Algiers.
Battle for Algiers.
Costa Gravas.
Sounds
so
intense. 1966, Battle for Algiers. 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb, 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, directed by Gillo Pontecorvo.
Gillo Pontecorvo, what did I think it was? Costa Gravas. Yes, it was, I think, a graduate of the kind of Italian neo-realist, you know, post-war realist filmmakers.
Right. Is he now? What, Bicycle Thieves?
Bicycle Thieves. Well, that's the epitome, yeah. The epitome of the Italian kind of realist, neo-realist.
Okay.
Filmmaking.
Yeah, which is like very, it's just gritty and intense and real style of filmmaking.
And there's obviously a counterpoint to, you know, Fellini and the kind of, the magical kind of fabulous kind of world that something like Fellini would create. Pontecorvo is radically different. He said dredging his art history lectures from 40 years ago out of the back of his brain.
Yeah, I remember my term, film studies term on Italian neorealism. And I think I've said all the things I can remember.
Me too.
Colonel Philippe is tasked with suppressing the uprising against the government in French Algeria. Soon, he finds that a petty criminal, Ali Lapointe, is recruited to fight against the colonizers. Does that sound right?
I guess, yeah. I mean, it, yes, I remember it just being very, it's quite violent, I mean, particularly for time, but it's a film that they, I know I remember doing something years ago with a guy from the War Studies Department at Bradford University. It's very much a text that they study, I think, as a kind of text for.
Oh.
Yeah, the Algerian liberation struggle is kind of slightly forgotten, really. Yeah, compared to Vietnam or Southeast Asia.
French colony, similar to Morocco, where
extraordinary brutal repression.
They considered it France, didn't they? The French,
yeah. And I think Algerian government, I think, is still extremely repressive now.
Yes,
that is a kind of, you know, that is a kind of hangover from
the
struggle in a way. You know, the country is profoundly traumatized. There was also the police chief in Paris after the war was. Same police chief that they'd had under the Nazis. He was never replaced. And there was a demonstration of Algerians in, I think 1966, about Algerian independence. And maybe it's in the 50s, and they killed hundreds of Algerians, and there was bodies floating in the Seine for days afterwards. And it's a very unknown sort of part of European history. It was just savage and brutal. Did they take them to a football stadium and then kill them? I can't remember. Wow. But it's a really extraordinary. You know, you think of, I mean, whatever you think of Britain's post-war history, we've never had a massacre on our soil like the French had with that demonstration.
Oh, my God. The 1961 Paris 61. Massacre. Mass killing of Algerians living in Paris by the French National Police, 17th of October, 1961, during the Algerian War. Under orders from the head of the Parisian police, Maurice Papon, the National Police attacked a demonstration by 30,000 pro-National Liberal Front, FLN, Algerians. After 37 years of denial and censorship of the press, in 1998, the government finally acknowledged 40 deaths, while some historians estimate that between 200 and 300 Algerians died. I want to see if it was in a football stadium.
I think Papon eventually lost this. They finally thought it might be a good idea. The guy who'd taken part in the deportation of Jews to the concentration camps, they thought, oh, probably not a good idea to have him as head of police. Makes Cressida Dick look almost
like fucking Cat Stevens.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh my God. Papon died in 2007.
Jesus.
Oh my God. Yeah. Mass drownings. Police officers threw demonstrators into the River Seine. My God, heavy beating. A lot of the deaths were due to heavy-handed beatings by the police. Yeah, man. And the Parisian police are still fucking racist.
I'm sure they are.
And the only reason they don't shoot every brown person they see is because they have to pay for their own bullets in their guns. Yeah. I wonder what would change in America if they made their cops pay for their own bullets.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. Some last minute business, please, Alexi, just to promote our Patreon page, please, if you don't mind. Support, as we were saying.
Come to see show, us on Sunday as well at the Museum of Comedy.
Yep. If this comes out before Sunday, then please come see us on Sunday at the Museum of Comedy. Lisa Mayer is going to be joining us. We're going to drag out loads of cool stories and anecdotes out of the both of them, Alexi and Lisa. But please support the Patreon because, you know, this show takes time to make and it's really great to do it, but support us, help keep us afloat. Go to patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast, AlexiSalePodcast, patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast. We never want to have adverts on this show. We don't want to sell out to the corporate
No, man.
So, subsidize us, buddy. We've got some new members to say hi to. Gareth, Dave the Boat, and James.
Hey.
Dave the Boat. LOL, someone called LOL. And John.
Hi.
God, your improv skills are on fire today.
Yeah.
Someone called CM Punk drinking a beer in an off license. Is that a reference to something?
I don't know.
Paul, Anthony, and Rupert. Josh and Erica.
Welcome.
Kicker Conspiracy. And the last few, we got Jackie, Stuart, Glenn, Stephen, Mark.
Welcome all, one and all, to my tavern of irony and cynicism and political left-wingism. Welcome, 2 and 6 for a pint of resistance. And the Marxist pies are 4 shillings.
One of these people joined the Ultimate Diamond memberships, paying 20 quid a month.
Wow.
Making up for all the other cheap carrying all the weight there. No, really, really, really appreciate you guys. Fuck me. It's super, super nice.
Thank you.
Of you all. What else? Lee Bowery. I'm going to see. I'm going to the Lee Bowery exhibition. I was going to ask you any thoughts or what should I? I don't know anything.
I've seen some documentaries and stuff about Lee Bowery, close associate of Derek Jarman, and of course was famously painted by Lucian Freud. I suppose you don't really have that kind of figure anymore, really. A figure in the London club scene, but very much a kind of his own creation, really.
Yeah.
Was he a regular at, like, what's that one where Boy George worked in the hat check department and would go through everybody's pockets and steal money? The Blitz Club. Down in Covent Garden.
I didn't know about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where all the new romantic started, you know, like Spandau Ballet and Steve Strange and all those groups, really. Which came after, you know, it was sort of like it was a very different thing, but, comic strip, an alternative cabaret was 79, 80, that, you know, also, you know, very much club, you know, club orientated movement in central London. And then I think after the Blitz was kind of came after that, really.
Well, one thing leads to another.
Yeah, they were contiguous, there was not a lot of crossover.
They were Caligulous.
But, right.
No, but it's all echoes of the same angle and expressive cultures and communities. All right, then. I think we've done enough.
Yeah, I hope this is all right.
This is nice, yeah.
Yeah.
See you Sunday.
See you Sunday.
I'll see you tomorrow with the...
I'll see you tomorrow. We're doing some humorous sketches for Tag Hickey.
Fun stuff. Then, all right. Say your usual catchphrase at the end, please.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Alexis L podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.